This is the Social Link Podcast, episode 36.
Portsmouth Racing is go!
On the whole moment till now, break away. Oh, let me out. Can you let me out? Can you set me free from being stuck in the world? Save me the last bit in the
brand new episode of the Social Link Podcast. It is October 2nd, Thursday of 2014. Wow, I actually did that out of order. This is Alex.
This is Anthony.
How goes it?
Usually I say this is Anthony, but I said holy shit, which is more appropriate.
Yes, it is holy shit, because this is the third episode that we actually recorded on October 2nd, 2014 on this Thursday. Holy fuck, dude.
So we began with a trip in the past, a trip to the present, and now we're going to talk about our viewers.
I was going to say, I'm like, I don't think this is a trip to the future, if that's what you're trying to get at. Yeah. So basically we decided that the third episode that we're going to be recording tonight is actually a Q&A comprised of all the questions that you guys have sent us over the past several months, weeks, or whatever, that we have not yet answered. So we want to, again, kind of stress to you guys, thank you very much for your support of the Social Link Podcast, because without you guys, there wouldn't be us. I mean, we love doing this every week, and I think that, you know, I think Anthony agrees. I mean,
I do agree. You know, whether, you know, I know, like, you know, we both have very polarizing opinions, so it's good to hear what you guys have to say. And hey, we may not agree with you, but we respect you, so we love that.
Well, I mean, I try to be empathetic towards, like, other people's opinions and stuff. Like, today, there was this one guy who basically said that The Walking Dead was not a game. You know, and I was kind of like, okay, I kind of get what you're saying with that, but at the same time, it's like, there hasn't, you know, he had very valid examples, because he basically said something along the lines of, like, well, you know, the choices aren't as impactful as you would think they would be. You know, because it's very linear, and he cited a really good example, Shadow of Destiny, which was a really good example. I was like, you know, he's right. You know, in Shadow of Destiny, like, if you fuck up in that game, you know, like, basic, you're fucked.
Shadow of Destiny is an ingenious game that's highly overlooked.
It is highly overlooked, and I was actually, you know, like, at first I was kind of like, you're kind of insane, like, and then, you know, he was kind of very strong out of the gate, because he basically you know, said that a lot of people were faking their tears while they were actually doing Let's Plays of The Walking Dead. But I'm kind of like, you know, you would be a very cold-hearted person if you didn't think that, regardless of whether or not the story's gameplay is linear or not, that the events of The Walking Dead were not heartbreaking. Especially the end.
God, that, yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking about the first season.
Yeah, we're talking about the first season. Yeah, forget the second season. But in any case, so yeah, I mean, I'm really excited about these questions and stuff. And I'm just going to pull some of these questions right out, because they really vary from person to person and stuff. And again, we really do appreciate all the questions that you guys sent us. And if you want to send more questions, I think these compilation episodes are really good anyway. Email us at sociallinkpodcast@gamerhorizon.com. Again, that's sociallinkpodcast@gamerhorizon.com. So, again, thank you very much for all these emails that we're about to read right now. So,
I'm down.
You ready?
Yes, sir. I'm ready to rock it out.
Okay, so let's start with Mike. And Mike hasn't sent us an email in a very long time. His first question is his typical top questions. Anthony and Alex, what are your top five most overrated video game consoles and why?
I don't know if I have a top five. You can't really do a top five, but
overrated,
I have one
overrated too. I'm thinking to myself, overrated consoles? I'm like, yeah, I can't. I have one, maybe.
What's your one?
Well, let me think about this real quick. I have two. The Dreamcast is one of them.
Oh, I'm 100% with you on that. We're going to get fucking
We're going to get hate mail. Holy shit. We're going to get some massive hate mail. So the Dreamcast and the Xbox One.
Okay. I can't say anything about Xbox One because I haven't had a whole lot of experience with it, right?
Right.
But the Dreamcast I owned, and I like my Dreamcast, but I don't know if it's, everyone's like, it has some of the greatest games of all time. And there are great games on it. I mean,
well, okay, you know, there's so, okay, wait, backtrack. Okay. What are the greatest games of all time on the Dreamcast?
The ones that people say? Well, this one you and I know it's not the greatest game of all time, and that's Shenmue.
Fuck no, Shenmue is not the best fucking, you know, game of all time. Hell no.
More hate mail.
I want to handcuff somebody on a fucking chair and have them play, like, Shenmue for, like, 8 hours straight. I want them to do that. And then I want them to come out of that experience saying it's the best game that's ever made.
I don't get why people say, even back then, when I bought Shenmue the day it came out, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it came out.
Wait. Did you find some sailors?
Yeah, I fought some sailors.
A lot of sailors?
Yeah, lots of
them. Where did you find the sailors?
I don't remember. Here's the thing about.
By the way, I already have our title.
Oh, shit. That solved the problem that we had with the last episode.
I know. Anyways, go ahead.
Okay. So, here's the thing with Shenmue. I bought it the day it came out, and I had Final Fantasy IX, and what was funny was Dreamcast at the time was, oh, it's the first next-gen system, which it was, right? But I found myself getting, like, at first I was like, Shenmue's kind of cool, you know? I get to go to the arcade and shit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I found myself at a point within a couple weeks only playing Shenmue to play fucking Space Harrier.
Which is kind of weird.
Yeah. You should not. You have a problem with a game when you play a classic game inside the main game, and that's your main reason for turning it on.
Yeah.
And the only reason I took Rio to work every day was to get money to play fucking Space Harrier.
Yeah, right?
Oh, shit. The problem with Shenmue is that it tried to be too many things at once. And I know, you know, I remember a few months back I said, oh, Shenmue's overrated. Holy fuck, did I open the floodgates on my Facebook page.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. To be completely fair, mm-hmm. It is a unique experience.
It is.
You can't find another game that does the exact same thing that Shenmue does really well.
That is true.
You know, it's... The parts of the game, the reason why the game falls apart for me is that the pacing of the game is just excruciatingly slow.
It is.
Like, for having such a strong beginning of your, you know, of your dad getting killed and stuff and all that stuff, it's like, you feel like, you would think that the main character, Ryo Hazuki, has some form of urgency to fucking exact revenge on his... On his dad's murderer. But no. You're taking him to the fucking arcade, you're drinking sake with a whole bunch of random people, and you're doing forklift racing.
Yep.
It's like, okay, yeah, I know my dad just died, and I have no idea where Landi is, but here I am, and I'm going to try to get some work.
Let's go to the arcade.
Let's go to the arcade and play Space Harrier all the time.
Let's go to work to get money to play Space Harrier, yeah. Instead of revenging my father.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying Shenmue is a horrible game. I'm just saying I get why people like it because, as you said, it's unique, but I thought it was just all over the place. It was like a kid with really bad ADHD,
For a game that is so allegedly story-driven, there's not a lot of story in it.
Yeah.
It's a lot of plot-driven pieces.
Now, Shenmue 2, let me ask you, did you play that?
No.
It the pacing's a little bit better, but I still had some of the same issues in that game, too.
I can believe that.
Yeah. And just to let you know, I'm going to say this for the 1,000th time, Shenmue 3's not happening. Game over, yeah.
The reason why I picked the Xbox One as my overrated console, my other overrated console, isn't because, you know, of all the hype that surrounds that the like Xbox One, right? I think that it was ill-conceived because they just basically decided, well, you know, we'll toss in a 733 megahertz chip in there and then call it a day. You know, they didn't really kind of know why console gamers stick to console gaming.
Right.
So, you know, although their approach was good, they perfected it in the Xbox 360, which I think is one of the best consoles ever made.
Xbox 360...
except for the failure rate.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that's the only caveat.
I you know, I honestly still, you know, I don't have a 360 at the moment, but I would rebuy one. It's just 360 had some good times on it. I had good times on it.
I had good times on it, but I don't pretty much care for it.
Right now, yeah. Yeah. But I have one more overrated one. This is the one that people are going to fucking crucify me over. Can I say it?
Sure.
The N64.
I forgot about the N64. The N64 is pretty overrated too, in my opinion.
Yo, wow, I'm glad you... Okay, so here's the thing with the N64. I think people remember it more for the games it had, those few games. I mean, yeah, you had some games that are immensely considered classics. Although I think Mario 64 is a game that suffers from some problems, a lot of problems. But that's just me. You have Ocarina of Time. You have, you know, you have the original Super Smash Brothers. Ironically, again, it's coming out tomorrow. As of this recording, as we are recording it, and you have some okay games. The problem with it was it didn't have the library that PlayStation had, and a lot of people put it on this pedestal just because of Ocarina of Time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not denying the greatness of Ocarina of Time, but to me too, nowadays you have a much better way to play Ocarina of Time, and that's the 3DS port,
right?
So I don't know, you know, the N64 just. It's just, I think it's Nintendo's weakest console. And I say that, even in the face of the Wii U, it is still its weakest console.
Mm-hmm.
The GameCube, I know a lot of people say that it's weakest console. Fuck no. That console's leaps and bounds ahead of the fucking Wii.
In terms of library, yeah. Like, you can clearly say that the GameCube had far and away better games than the Nintendo 64, no doubt. Yeah.
And I will say this. I'm going to say something blasphemous, but you agree with me on it, I think. I think Mario Sunshine is 20 times better than Mario 64.
They took risks. I appreciate when companies take risks. It didn't have the same kind of Mario feel that we wanted. I mean, we pretty much mm-hmm. discovered that the only way to do that is with 3D Land, right? Right. But I appreciate that they gave it a good solid try with Sunshine. And in fact, Sunshine was really fun.
All right, I think that's our overrated consoles.
Yeah, so the next question is directed to you, Anthony.
Oh.
Are you more of a console gamer or a PC gamer, and why?
You know, I'll just say it. I am a console gamer, but I do like to revisit the PC side of things. Some of my favorite games are PC games, right?
Right.
For example, Baldur's Gate 2, PC game. Neverwinter Nights, PC game. Only on PC. Both of those. Both classic games. Both masterpieces. Some of the best stuff BioWare has ever designed. Some of the most innovative stuff BioWare has ever designed. Neverwinter Nights is still one of their most innovative products to this day that you can do things that you cannot do and seen in any other game.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, it emulates the D&D experience in a visual format that I don't think any game has ever been able to do.
Mm.
So there's that. So PC games, and then System Shock 2, which is a game I'm playing through for my stream, as you've been seeing for the last couple weeks at this point. I like that game. There's just a lot of stuff on PC that I like, but again, I always go back to the console.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing against PC. I mean, for me, I'm the type of guy that if I hear there's a really good game on PC, I will look into it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just gravitate where the games are.
Yeah.
But I do ultimately, there is a bias towards the console.
Right, so. Right. Obviously.
So that's all I got to say on that.
Okay. All right, next question. Anthony and Alex, this, by the way, this is all from Mike.
Okay.
So we have to thank him after this whole thing for sending these questions. This is very lengthy, so pay attention, all right?
Okay.
Anthony and Alex, is this me? Is it just me? Or in recent times, Japan has become much more conservative when it comes to violence and sex in video games compared to the U.S.? I ask this because several games that were rated T for teen in the USA are rated 0D in Japan, and the 0D rating is the M-rated equivalent for the 0 system. Several examples include Uncharted 3, Hell Yeah, Wrath of the Dead Rabbit. I have no idea what that is.
I don't know either.
Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons. Wow, really?
Brothers, why that game?
Yeah. Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons, Senran Kagura Burst, Soul Calibur 5, and and all the Soul Calibers. And non-0D examples include Banjo-Kazooie, Banjo-Tooie, Lego City Undercover, and Disney Infinity. And they're all rated 0B in Japan as well, which is the 0 equivalent of a higher-end E10 rated game or a low-end T-rated game, which is odd for sufficiently innocent family-friendly games that are closer to a 0A rating. The 0 equivalent of an E-rated game or low-end E10 rated game, as stuff like Lego games and Disney games, it's a run-on. Disney games are considered family-friendly in Japan, minus a few exceptions like Pirates of the Caribbean, etc. Which, actually, this is interesting, they share the same 0 rating as Street Fighter. So that's kind of weird. I guess Pirates and Street Fighter share the same rating. Another example is the 2012 digital download version of Fighting Vipers, because it was rated 0C in Japan, which is a higher-end T rating or low-end M rating equivalent.
Hmm.
And it also got E10 in the US. And Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare was rated 0C in Japan, but E10 in the US. And the oddest one is the Infamous series, as all the games in the series in Japan are rated 0Z, which is the highest end mature and adult only rated equivalent in Japan. While in the US, it's rated T for teen. And speaking of the conservatism and violence for video games in Japan, even stuff made natively in Japan, like the most recent Metal Gear games, like Ground Zero, were censored in Japan despite getting a 0D rating. So I guess the question is, again, is Japan becoming more conservative to violence and sex compared to the US?
This is a fucking fantastic question. Don't you think?
This is very thorough too, and we do appreciate the time you put into this, man.
Thank you. This is a fucking, we could do a whole episode on this possibly,
yeah.
But for the sake of time, we'll have to make it quick. We could talk about it more, but wow, that's just, you know, one thing that I know recently happened in the last year or so is Japan for the longest time was very open towards sex with minors in games. And I know there was a crackdown on that, right? Wasn't there?
Which one? Sorry.
They were very open with sex with minors, you know, pedophilia stuff.
I don't think they ever were.
But they started cracking down on it recently, though.
No, those are doujinshis. Those are like things that you just, it's kind of like walking into like a porn store and finding like, you know, something that, you know, was should kind of independent released or some shit like that, and, you know, makes a lot of money because it doesn't, it costs dirt cheap to actually buy in stock, you know, so. Anyways.
Yeah. Anyway, that's kind of a bad topic, but what I'm saying is this is interesting because the Infamous games aren't too violent. Uncharted, there's a lot of gunplay, but they're not the most, this is odd. I'm like, wow, when some of the games he listed.
Mm-hmm.
And they're censoring Metal Gear games? I was not aware of this.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, too. I've noticed, with a lot of character designs in some of the more recent Japanese games, too, female characters are becoming a bit more conservative.
No. They're not.
I'm full of shit then.
You are full of shit, because I'm looking at every single NAS game coming out and every single Atlas game. No fucking way.
Okay. Oh, yeah, NIS. Gotta love NIS, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we won't go into that. But I'm just saying, this is interesting. What do you make of it? I don't know what else to say.
I will burst people's bubbles right now. Japan has always been a conservative country.
Okay.
Come on. We're talking about Shinto Buddhist values from the very beginning, and a society where they encourage you to keep everything in and not express it.
Okay.
If that isn't a sign of conservatism, I don't know what is.
I gotcha.
Because, I mean, I this reminds me of a conversation I had with a friend of mine who is actually Japanese 5 years ago. And she was, you know, because I was telling her, like, wow, you know, like, it's crazy how open, like, you know, the Japanese are when it comes to a lot of different things and stuff. And, you know, they're very polite and stuff like that. And then she immediately shot me down and said, they don't really feel what they actually show you. And I'm like, I beg your pardon? And she basically said, well, in Japanese culture, we're taught to keep all of our feelings and emotions in, and even our thoughts, which is why it's a lot of, that's why there's a lot of polite traditions in Japanese culture. But in general, we are taught to hold in a lot of the things that we feel. You know, like, for example, like, no one, you know, like the person who bowed at you at the McDonald's, they probably, you know, and they're all cheery and stuff like that. It's, they're probably like, you know, they're probably working like so many hours and stuff, and they're just trying to hide it behind a smile. And I kind of thought about this a little bit, and, this has a lot to do in general with, and it's kind of weird to kind of generalize this, but I did take a Japanese literature class back in college, and my professor, John, I believe his name is John Nathan. He's actually a very well-known kind of literature expert for Japanese literature.
Japanese literature, right.
Yeah, he said that a lot of the Japanese literature has roots from World War II with the defeat of the Japanese, and anime is a lot of the anime, the how cute it is, how sugary saccharine it is a direct, it has a direct correlation with their feelings about World War II. It's as if, it's almost as if they're trying to hide the shame of what happened. So it's almost,
which a lot of countries do. We do it too.
We do it as well, but not to the same extent as the Japanese is, where it's pretty much pervaded their society. I mean, think about it. The Japanese have no military presence. They cannot assemble a military at all.
What is it? They only have the SDF or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. But they cannot mobilize a military at all. It's part of, you know, what happened in World War II. So, you know, I can't say that I'm surprised that these ratings are kind of popping up, Mike. But if you take a look into the history of Japanese literature, you would pretty much see, like, find some answers there, I think. I think those would be really, really rather be fascinating things to kind of investigate. Because, like what my friend said, not everybody in Japan is happy. That's why there's a lot of people who actually do suicides in Japan. So, because their culture is, there's no one to talk to. There's no one to talk to in Japan if you have, like, personal problems or anything. People will just encourage you to just keep it to yourself.
Right. And let me add something too about anime that I've noticed for years is that in a lot of animes, when you have a romantic interest, you see more sexual tension than you even see a kiss.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then, you know, you look back. I want to talk about Neon Genesis for a quick second. That show caused a lot of controversies and a lot of things. But one of the, you know, everyone talks about the ending. That's the most notable. It also caused controversy, I believe, in 20 or 21. Where there's a scene where Misato goes off to see Kanji, and it shows him lying in bed after having sex. And that a lot of people forget, caused a lot of controversy at the time.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you pretty much agree that Japan has always been conservative. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That kind of blew my mind, but now it all makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. They've always been conservative. They've always been conservative. It's just cool. People think that, you know, like, because the outwardness of them, you know, like, is that way, that's, you know, there's a lot of far-reaching societal stuff that we can go into. But, you know, again, if you look at Japanese literature and then study the history and stuff, you'll be like, wait, that actually makes sense. And if you have like an actual native of Japan, which that was my friend, like talk to them about it and has lived there for a while, they'll tell you like they smile because they're hiding something. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Somehow I'm reminded of Fatal Frame for some reason. Anyways, another part of
Fatal Frame. I love those games. Yeah. Those are
yeah. Anyways. So are you ready for the next question?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so
is it from Mike?
Yes. Still from Mike.
Okay.
Anthony and Alex, I know this GameSpot article is outdated from May 10th, but the GameSpot article talks about video games and libertarianism going hand in hand. He's talking about an article called Video Games and Libertarianism Go Hand in Hand, Polled Finds. If you guys agree or disagree with the article, do you guys agree or disagree with the article? With the article in the link below. And speaking of a political related question, I know that Anthony once liked Barack Obama, but do you not like him anymore because of SOFA, PIPA, blah, 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 and Obama asked Congress to commission violent games study, etc.
Let me get the Obama question out of the way. I'll make it real quick, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I think he's... I have some issues. I don't have any... My general commentary on the government is like anyone else. It's the whole government's our system's not broken, but the people running the system is broken. And that's all I got to say on that. Both Republican and Democrat. So mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's all I got to say on that.
Yeah. And it's I mean, politics is a flavor of the day kind of thing. They will find a target. They will hit on it. They'll move on. The violent video games thing just happened to be a flavor of the day, so they hit it, and then they moved on. Did you even hear about anything about the violent video game study after, like, Biden did it? Nope, not really. I mean, maybe one article, but we just quickly rushed it under the carpet because we're done. Due diligence, right? Because the murder already happened and everything. We did our part and studied everything, and all is good. Next.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's like they follow the media. The government's... I don't want to get into it. I just...
The bottom line is that, you know, it's not the political system, but it's just the choice of people.
If you look at our Constitution and stuff, I believe the United States has a very good system of government. It's not the system that's broken, it's the people running it, and I will leave it at that. So.
Yeah. And as far as video games and libertarianism... That's kind of a stretch. I read that article and I was kind of like, not so much.
I didn't even read the... I don't read anything from... You know, I don't read anything from the big main sites anymore. I can't take them seriously. That's just me, though.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I kind of read it just, you know, just kind of like for, you know, for shits and giggles. And I was kind of like, yeah, no, it's not. Yeah, I don't think so. It's not as... If it were really as cut and dry as that, then, you know, I could basically, like, put some money down for, like, the lottery, and I'll win tomorrow. I'll even predict what time. Nothing is as simple as it seems.
Yeah, it's not. It's not. Yep. There's two sides to everything, you know. Even the gaming controversy right now, there's two sides to that. So, you know, you can't just... It's any controversy, no matter what it is, or political side, you gotta look at both sides, so...
Exactly, exactly.
So
Mike's last question... Anthony and Alex, do you guys think that the beginning of the end of George Lucas... This is not a video game question. Do you guys think the beginning of the end of George Lucas' career was the Star Wars re-edits, prequel trilogy, and the infamous Jar Jar Binks? As all three of them have had negative reception among critics and fans alike. And I guess some people believe that George Lucas sold his company to Disney because of those three things. What do you think? I want you to answer this first.
Okay, so the I didn't really get the first part. I was listening.
Basically, like he's saying that, do you guys think, you know, do we think that he sold the company because he failed at the prequel trilogy and kind of like reviving Star Wars as a relevant franchise, I suppose?
What's funny about the prequel trilogy, I don't like them, I'll be honest, you know, I'm old school fan. What's funny, though, is that Star Wars, it never hurt the Star Wars brand, really.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it became stronger, actually.
It did. And you have things like BioWare keeping it alive, or all the novels, or all the Dark Horse comics, or things like that. Well, okay, so the Star Wars brand was never really hurt by the prequel films.
Mm-hmm.
And regardless of the quality, the prequel films still made money. And I guarantee you, if George Lucas was behind episode 7, 8, and 9, just hypothetically saying, people would still go see him.
Yep. And the reason why George Lucas actually sold the company to Disney is because he's retiring. He's an old man.
He's old. That's the thing. This is, you know, I'm sure part of it had to do with the criticisms. Because if you look at early 2012, way before the Disney announcement was made, January 2012, I think George Lucas was releasing Tales or some movie about the Tuskegee Airmen.
Mm-hmm.
And someone asked him, well, you know, why don't you do the, you know, the Star Wars sequels? And he said, why? Everyone just yells at me about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that had part, I'll be honest, it had to do with it. Just a recommendation, Mike, and it's on Netflix. One of the most interesting documentaries I've seen in it, and what's great about it is it looks at both sides, like we were talking about. It's called The People vs. George Lucas.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen this?
No.
It's on Netflix. At least it was last I saw. It is such a good documentary, and I highly recommend it because it looks at, you know, the dichotomy between George Lucas and the fans and what happened, but it looks at both sides. And, you know, like some people are like, look, this one guy's like, hey, we like a movie about space wizards. And that's what Star Wars is about. Mm-hmm. Not really that big of a deal. But, it, you know, in some cases, you'll be like, yeah, you know, it's understandable that we get mad. But then in some cases, you're like, this is really fucking stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So it's I would recommend that. And it gives you insight in the whole Star Wars fandom and George Lucas and things like that.
Okay.
So there you go. What about you?
I mean, I pretty much said that he sold it because he's retiring. I mean, think about it. When the sale of Lucasfilm to Disney happened, George Lucas was 68 years old. He is 70 right now.
Right.
Even if you are the lore keeper of the Star Wars franchise, there's no way that you can make, I mean, unless you're, you know, Clint Eastwood or something like that, like, there's no way you can make like the next movies and, you know, and kind of continue. It's almost like, you know, it's almost kind of like what Steve Jobs did with Apple before he died. He actually kind of passed the torch to other people. Now, you know, that whether or not they were successful is a different question entirely. But the fact of the matter is, you can't own and you can't run a company just by yourself forever. Because eventually you'll need to pass it along to people who actually know what they're doing. And that's exactly what he did. And he knew, based off of how Disney treated the Star Wars franchise and the Indiana Jones franchise over the past, oh, more than 20 years, that mm-hmm. they will do well with taking care of that legacy.
And people forget that Disney had a relationship with the Star Wars and Indiana Jones franchise in some way. They always have.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's just something, yeah. You know.
I mean, the only place that you can find Indiana Jones and Star Wars in a theme park is at Disneyland. And of course, the Disney parks. They've done a tremendous job making sure that both Star Wars and Indiana Jones is in the hearts and minds of everybody who walks into that theme park. Which is exactly why George Lucas picked Disney as a partner, because he knew that Star Wars and Indiana Jones will exist well past the life of the movies in those parks.
And as critical as I am of Marvel, Disney has, you know, for the mainstream audiences, done wonderful things with Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
all right. So thank you once again for Mike for sending us all these questions. I think this is a good format. I like being able to just answer all these questions in this one episode and then just kind of running through all of them, you know, like, because I think that this, you know, makes this episode feel special.
I do, too. I think this is cool.
Yeah. So, all right. So the next question is from Lewis.
Yes. Wouldn't be a show without Lewis.
Of course. He said, Dear Alex and Anthony, first of all, congratulations on making 30 plus episodes on the Social Link and for Anthony for getting a PS4. So, my question is, have you ever had a situation where you were biased for exclusives? For example, For me, I am happy that Watch Dogs and Destiny for... Oh, okay. So, basically, he's talking about exclusives. So, for example, Watch Dogs and Destiny for the PS3 and PS4 have exclusive content. But he's really upset that Rise of the Tomb Raider was a timed exclusive for Microsoft consoles. So, in other words, like, are you okay with certain exclusives, but are okay with certain exclusives? Like, for example, are you okay with the fact that Destiny and Watch Dogs have exclusive content on the PS3 and PS4? And are you upset that Rise of Tomb Raider is only coming out for Microsoft's consoles? And, of course, the last part of the question is, do you think exclusives hurt the consumers?
Well, I'll tell you this. I never have bought a game based off of DLC content for a console.
Same.
Yeah, I have. I don't think that's initiative enough. I think that's something very shallow and superficial, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I based my platform choices on two things. The only exclusives that matter are first-party exclusives, okay? That's why I'm still a supporter of Nintendo, and that's why I'm a supporter of Sony, particularly. Right. Because they, in my opinion, have the best first-party exclusives.
Sure.
And just because I'm a little biased, I associate certain brands with certain companies. So I feel more natural playing a Metal Gear Solid or a Final Fantasy on a PlayStation console than I would an Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just saying. But vice versa, you know, maybe I would feel more comfortable playing a Dead Rising game on an Xbox console as opposed, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay.
And I just prefer the way the direction Sony is going in. So, I mean...
That's not his question.
Right. Right, I'm getting to that real quick.
Okay.
But back to, you know, the whole exclusive thing. I don't, you know, like I said, I'll reiterate. I've never bought anything for exclusive DLC, and you never have either?
No. When I pre-order a game, I usually think, I want to play the game on day one. That's why I pre-order it. Okay.
Right.
As far as exclusives go, I actually, and this is funny, so you remember Grand Theft Auto 4 came out on both PS3 and 360? You remember
right.
that?
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, Rockstar said that the 360 version was going to have exclusive content. I actually bought the PS3 version over the 360 version.
Why was that?
What do you mean? Why was that?
Why did you buy the PS3 over the 360?
Because I felt like that I like playing the game on PlayStation. Because I have all the other... Because, I mean, I have a backwards compatible PlayStation 3. So it would be cool to be able to play all the Grand Theft Autos on one platform.
Right, you would play three.
No,
San Andreas.
One, London... San Andreas, you know, 3 and Vice City. Yeah, I can play them all on one console. From 1 all the way up to 5.
Dude, that's brilliant.
Yeah. That's the informed decision that I made. And then, of course, later on, of course, when they released the quote-unquote exclusive content, now I can be like, oh, okay, well, now I can buy the rest of it. You know?
That's right. And then they come on Lewis's, the PS3 eventually.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah.
So to add to Lewis's question, yeah, well, it doesn't really hurt consumers necessarily, but it does piss them off big time.
It does.
Yeah. You're basically, you know, all the good, you're basically like taking a risk with all the goodwill that you built up about your game, and then all of a sudden, bam, by the way, you can only get this here. You know. I am not happy with the exclusives that Watch Dogs and Destiny has for PS3 and PS4 owners. I think everybody should have it. I am pretty upset that Rise of Tomb Raider is a timed exclusive. But that's when you have to basically like speak with your dollar.
Exactly.
You know.
And I think part of it, Xbox, Microsoft hasn't released any numbers on the Xbox One sales, so I don't know. There's some troubling news on their front too. I'm worried. And look, I don't. So I think the timed exclusive might have been like something desperate.
Well, it's funny because this has been one of the biggest pushes for Microsoft and Square to actually confirm that this is just a timed exclusivity. it got so out of hand that Phil Spencer basically had to say that, yeah, this is a time exclusive. What do you want? You know, because he got so annoyed with this, with the constant questioning. But that's what you get for trying to basically, like, you know, strong arm everybody. Because it's only coming out on one platform. One platform. It's not even coming out on PC, which to me, like, it was a slap on the wrist already when we heard that it's not coming out on PS4. It's worse now that the PC people can't even get it. You know?
That's a load of shit. And Tomb Raider was one of the best games of last year, and it sold as it did because it was on both PS3 and Xbox 360.
And it sold more on the PlayStation.
Yeah,
yeah. Stupid. Doesn't make sense.
There you go on that.
But yeah, so basically that's our assessment of it. The exclusives, don't fucking do it. You're just going to piss off all the people who basically are fans of your product.
The only exclusives that are relevant are first party, because you expect them to be relevant.
Yeah.
Well, you expect them to be first parties, I mean, because you own the fucking company.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about it.
Yep. So thanks again, Lewis, for that question. We're moving on to the next and final one that we have. This is by Xander. So he says, "Hey guys, Xander here from XS Gaming Podcast. I wanted to ask your thoughts on the recent rumors that Nintendo's next console might be a handheld console hybrid. Also, what is your favorite gaming soundtrack? Anyway, love the show, you guys. You guys have become my new favorite podcast for my after-work evenings. Happy gaming."
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you very much, Xander.
Glad you're enjoying the show, my man.
Mm-hmm.
Glad you are. So, let's do the Nintendo handheld thing, because the soundtrack thing is a little crazy. So
I personally think that Nintendo's next console will not be that, because as it stands right now, they want to keep both of them separate in order for them to actually maximize the revenue for each and make adjustments. Because if they make a hybrid handheld console hybrid, it will be very difficult for them to gauge whether or not it's successful because it's a portable, or it's successful because it's a good console. So it's a lot easier to just kind of say, okay, the Wii U is not doing too well, but look at the 3DS, it's doing really well, you know? And I don't think they'll do that, mainly because they have a habit of making handhelds every year, and I don't think they'll be able to do that if they had a handheld home console hybrid.
Yeah, you can't really get away with, like, the different models as much as you can with a handheld. I mean, Sony did it with the Vita. They've done different models with handhelds. You can't really get away with that with consoles. You can have slim versions, but when you have, but a different model on a handheld is a little bit more crucial than, say, on a console, right? If you get a slimmer PlayStation, yeah, you have a little bit more breathing space on your shelf. But I think, you know, when you have a bigger screen on a 3DS, that's kind of crucial, wouldn't you agree?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, you know, you and I have both owned original model 3DSs and XLs now. Because I know you got an XL. And is not the difference so much better on an XL?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, that's just that. So, I agree with you on this.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, if Nintendo makes a new console, I wonder if they would try something less experimental than what they've done with these last two.
I don't know.
Who knows?
Don't know. Yeah, Nintendo is in this weird path of we don't know what they're doing. We don't know. Rather, they don't know what they're doing.
Right.
And I can just imagine the frustration with Shigeru Miyamoto's head, like having to deal with all these different kinds of control schemes. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck? It's almost like, can you imagine him saying, what the fuck did you guys, you put a fucking screen on the goddamn game? What the, you know, like, can you imagine, like, him saying that? Just in frustration?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there, but like I said, I say a million times, my stance is, yeah, they have some issues, but I like their game still, so.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah. So what's your favorite gaming soundtrack?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I can tell you right now, it's Final Fantasy XIV for the time being.
That soundtrack is great.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
It's also
I'm in
cheating.
The Corythia Highland?
Here's the thing. It's also cheating because it also encompasses some remixes of other older Final Fantasy music.
That's true.
Like Crystal Tower, Circus Tower, and all that stuff. So
Chocobo theme.
Chocobo theme. Gilgamesh.
It's awesome. I love the music in the Kowrather Highlands. It reminds me of some of those when you're going into like the darker areas of a Final Fantasy game, and when you have those classic Nobuo Uematsu soundtracks, mm-hmm. where they got bleaker, it reminded me of that. So yeah,
Kowrather's Highlands has a really good soundtrack.
Oh God, yes. As far as gaming soundtrack, that's really difficult. You know, I'll narrow it down to some composers. My favorites probably are Yasunori Mitsudo. I love his soundtracks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he did my favorite game of all time, Xenogears, but he's also known for Chrono Trigger, Chrono Cross, various other games. His soundtracks are just absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Uematsu, you can't go wrong with him.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, so it's hard for me to narrow soundtrack, but I can go with composers. I guess that's cheating, too. Koji Kondo. Okay. Yeah, Koji Kondo. Koji Kondo's so iconic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's made some of the most iconic video game songs that they break the video game. The Mario Brothers theme, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, fuck. So I really can't narrow it down to one soundtrack, though. It's hard. I did Final Fantasy VI and Xenogears, I guess, if I had to choose a soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a good question. It's just, it's great how gaming music is that.
Mm-hmm.
Just in general. There's so many great soundtracks out there.
Right.
So, what do you think? Anything particular that sticks out? Other than Final Fantasy XIV?
So, some of my favorite soundtracks, I mean, if you want to talk about classics, I love the Ninja Gaiden 1, 2, and 3 soundtrack.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, for the NES, yeah. I those are classic video game soundtracks that I can still listen to. And so many people, like, you know, like, try to cover them. You know what I mean? Like, there's just something to the beat of those that's very, very uniquely 80s that you can kind of respect. I've mentioned this before in the podcast, but I remember when, to promote Ninja Gaiden 2, Tecmo actually asked Anthrax, you know, the heavy metal band, to play Ninja Gaiden in EGM. I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
And did Anthrax do it?
Yeah, they did. They had a photo of Anthrax in front of a freaking NES playing Ninja Gaiden 2.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Anthrax, you know what's cool about Anthrax is that they're a band for being geeks. They were the first band known for that.
That I didn't know, so that's a revelation for me.
Yeah, because they did tracks on Judge Dredd, they did tracks on Stephen King, Stan, mm-hmm. Batman, all kinds of shit.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to talk about, like, composers, I mean, mm-hmm. Uematsu is obviously up there, right?
Oh, yeah.
But somebody who not a lot of people know is Yuzo Koshiro.
Okay.
You probably don't know who he is.
I don't, but I'm sure I've heard his tracks.
He did the soundtracks for the early Ys games, Ys 1 and 2.
Ooh, yes, okay. Excellent.
But he also did all of Streets of Rage.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
And both ActRaisers.
Oh, nice.
Tales of Phantasia.
Ooh.
Oh, actually, no. He didn't do Tales of Phantasia. I'm sorry, my bad. He did Etrian Odyssey, of course. He did a lot of really good stuff. Those are just a few of his games. He did I'm reading through his Wikipedia right now. Revenge of Shinobi.
Nice.
The 8-bit version of Sonic the Hedgehog. Streets of Rage 2, of course, Streets of Rage 3, Zork 1 for the PS1, Shenmue, part of Shenmue 1 and 2, Namco Cross Capcom, Etrian Odyssey, he did that, Super Smash Brothers Brawl, he did something there, Half Minute Hero, he did something there, Kid Icarus, he did some stuff for Kid Icarus. But yeah, he's still pretty active, actually. He actually did some songs for Persona Q, Shadow of the Labyrinth, and Super Smash Brothers, the new one coming out tomorrow.
You know. Let me say something. Let's go to Yi's for a second. Books 1 and 2, though. It's a general consensus from a lot of people who played that Yi's Book 1 and 2, and I'll agree, is just one of the greatest soundtracks ever made.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you agree? That soundtrack is...
I am unfamiliar with it, but you are, so I can't say anything about it.
It's really... How are you familiar with his tracks? What game made
Rage.
You...
Streets of Rage. Streets okay. of Rage.
Yeah, if you get a chance, I know you're not the biggest fan of Yi's, but go put in the Yi soundtrack on YouTube, Alex, and just they're just awesome to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
I'll
check it out when I get a chance.
Yeah, really good stuff.
Okay.
So,
I think that's it though for all the questions. That went by really fucking fast.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Great.
But I think that I like the format. I like saving all the questions for one episode. I think I really dig it.
Indeed. I do too. I think we should do it more. Mm-hmm. So send us, to Xander, Mike, and Lewis, send us more questions. And to those, don't be shy. We don't bite,
Yeah. Yeah. Send us more questions at sociallinkpodcast@gamerhorizon.com. Again, that's sociallinkpodcast@gamerhorizon.com. We love emails. I mean, this is a really fun episode, just doing like an episode dedicated to emails. This is really cool. We want to do it again. So more questions.
And all the questions were great.
Yeah, all the questions were really good, well thought out. So thank you again for the guys who sent the emails, and of course for the people who, again, are curious about sending us emails and just kind of hesitated. Don't hesitate. Just send us an email at sociallinkpodcast@gamerhorizon.com. And finally, go to my Twitch, twitch.tv/backlogbattle_Alex. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/eternityinblack. And you can follow Anthony on Twitter at twitter.com/magusx1. And of course, if you want to continue his adventures through System Shock 2, you can check it out at twitch.tv/magusx1.
So, and YouTube, where it all began, youtube.com/megasix1.
Awesome. All right, guys. So hopefully you guys have a fantastic weekend, because you guys are probably going to be checking this out for the weekend. And by the time you guys listen to this, I will be in the Final Fantasy 14 Fan Festival. Yeah.
Fuck you.
All right, guys. Until next week, have fun. Enjoy gaming. See ya.